SAP Concur does what might seem impossible for your business. It makes employees happy and finance happy. How? Well, employees love automated expense claims and invoices they can submit and approve from anywhere. And finance loves that they have full visibility into employee spend. Plus, SAP Concur integrates with leading finance systems, making the process better for everyone. SAP Concur. Expense, travel, invoice. Learn more at concur.co.uk.
This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. This is episode 202, and yes, this episode and last episode are two of the saddest episodes that we've had, simply because the Cardinals have suddenly become the worst team, it seems, in the NFL. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL Wire site. My co-host is, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. That's SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. Seth, it's hard to be a Cardinals fan right now, isn't it?
You know, from our perspective, from a content perspective, it's a gold mine right now. But it's a gold mine because everybody's so angry and befuddled. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to what has happened to this Arizona Cardinals team at this point. This is not anything we expected. And now we are two games into the season, and it's – I mean – you and I talked about it a little bit off the air, but it is, I would say, the worst two-game stretch I can remember in maybe the last decade, if not longer, of Arizona Cardinals football.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the Arizona Cardinals, they lost. You know, we talked about the 24-6 season opening loss to the Washington Redskins at home. Believed that they would change something and at least look competent in week two against the LA Rams. Guess what? Didn't happen. 34-0 shutout. And not only that, but it was the second quarter again after giving up 21 points to the Redskins in quarter two after holding them scoreless. Same thing happened in week two, 19 points. And this was with the Rams team that didn't have a kicker anymore. So they were giving up touchdowns and two-point conversions. And the stat to look at is that the Sean McVay-led Rams have completely obliterated the Cardinals in three games, with 16 points scored in three games to nearly, I think, 99 points, 90-something points. They've outscored like 92-16 or 94-16 in three games. Awful, awful stuff. So tonight's show, recording on a Tuesday, getting ready, you'll probably listen to this on a Wednesday or later in the week. The Cardinals are getting ready to play the Chicago Bears this week, and trying to salvage something. There's a lot going wrong. So we're going to go back and look at this last game. We're going to talk about the good. We want to start with the good because there's not a whole lot of it. Then we're going to go over everything that went wrong, and that's a whole lot of things. And we're going to talk about how can we fix it? How can it be fixed? What can be fixed? And more importantly, is it time for Josh Rosen after the play of Sam Bradford? And then we're going to look at, well, is there any chance at all against the Chicago Bears, who just defeated the Seattle Seahawks 24-17 on Monday Night Football. And they have, and it looks like maybe, at least early on, that the Bears might be developing the Jaguars of the NFC. Maybe. That defense looks really good.
Yeah, and I just don't see how at this point they have any chance because their offense is so bad. And we saw on Sunday again, the defense, it gets worn down. It gets to the point where you're not flipping field position. You're not making teams go on long drives. You know, and instead, what ends up happening is that a team is able to kind of just dink and dunk their way down the field. When you look at the drives of the Rams in this game, you know, you look at the first quarter, it was, you know, seven plays, punt, 4 plays, 59 yards. They had an 11-play drive, 52 yards for a field goal. I mean, they had a 5-play, or sorry, an 8-play, 32-yard touchdown drive just before the half. I mean, I guess the 59-yard touchdown drive was okay. 4 plays and 59 yards, but like, or 59 yards and 4 plays, but it's not like they were, I mean, 58 yards before the interception, 56 yards, 44 yards, 50 yards. I mean, it's not like they were going, you know, 80 yards, 90 yards and driving just down the throats of the defense. I mean, they were going 50 yards or less every series to have to score. And if a team only has to go half a field to get points in the NFL, that's not hard. And on the flip side, the Cardinals are always starting, it seems like, inside their own 20. And I think they had four series all game that were more than 3 plays.
Whew.
Four. That's offensive plays, obviously. Punts notwithstanding. But, I mean, that's awful. That is putrid play. And for that reason, I don't see how you can say that they have a chance at this juncture with the way their offense is playing.
But we're going to start with the good. Okay, we've got some nuggets of good. Maybe a little bit to look forward to. Let's look back at the game. Starting off, the good stuff. I can see one very clear positive that the Cardinals fixed in a way. After getting gashed and gashed and gashed and gashed in the running game against the Washington Redskins, they did not get gashed in the running game by the Rams. They still gave up 90 yards, but it took them 33 carries, so they gave up under 3 yards a carry. They kept Todd Gurley in check. I mean, they had some tackles for loss. They were disciplined in the run game overall. There were still some things that happened, obviously, but at least the run-stopping woes seem to have been alleviated for now. So I can look at that as one important. You know, if they're gonna improve something each week, that was the thing to start with. Stop the run. Now, if they can, you know, stop something else, like if they could have just a competent defensive unit before moving on to fixing the offense, that's a start. But at least for now, the run defense looked good again.
Yeah, it's manageable. It's passable. I know people will lament the 3 Todd Gurley touchdowns, but again, I mean, we're talking short yardage type stuff. It's not like he was breaking long plays. It comes back to this defense is really, really struggling to stop the pass. That's the biggest thing, and they're struggling to get breaks. So it's something that we've seen too much of, where they're coming off the field after getting a stop on a 7-play drive, and then the Cardinals go 3 and out, and it's now, you know, on the defense again, and it's not working. But you're right. I mean, the run defense 100% looked better this week. I think the other big positive, big takeaway from this was Vincent Maioa looked like a guy that you're gonna have to convince me to start Marcus Golden after that, right? Not just oh well, Marcus Golden's healthy, so Vincent Maioa is going back to a bench role. Maioa finished with 2 sacks, 4 tackles for loss, so it wasn't just, you know, it just wasn't some empty sack numbers. You know, 2 sacks, 4 tackles for loss. I think he had, what, 7 or 8 tackles overall on the day. 7 tackles.
And yeah. hit the quarterback another pair of times. So he was the catalyst defensive. So he was a defensive force, which, you know, that's kind of the negative, is that Chandler Jones was invisible against the run. But Benson Mayowa, very good game. A guy who has not, you know, is not reputed to be good against the run. Four tackles for loss. That was part of that improved run defense. Mayowa played much better. One of the sacks that was, it was a coverage sack, but the other one later in the game was a Benson Mayowa sack. So now he's got two sacks in the game and in the season. And well, with Marcus Golden coming back, that's important, because Golden will probably not be productive early on.
No, he won't. And, you know, right now the Cardinals need as many positives as they can possibly muster. And at this point, that's kind of what they have. We didn't talk about it quite yet, but another superstar showed up in the game and, you know, looked really good. And that was obviously Patrick Peterson. And not just the interception. This is something I wrote about. Peterson was a presence in the running game, something we've not seen in what, 3 or 4 years from him. Right. He looked active. He looked physical. Can you say? And so it was,
I will say he did get posterized on that Todd Gurley touchdown, but
oh yeah, but that's going to happen to anybody. But the difference was he was making a concerted play, and it was actually near the line of scrimmage. It wasn't like it was in the open field when he was kind of trying to hide from it. Instead, it was him trying to come up and make a play, and it was Todd Gurley was better on that play than Patrick Peterson. And so, right, you know, that's going to happen. It's the same thing when a guy is trying to take on David Johnson in the open field. We typically assume that David Johnson's going to win.
You're like, poor guy. That's what you look at. Now, you look at what happened in the running game. I think they made a concerted effort to include Peterson in that, because if you look at the stats, he was, you know, he had nothing in week one. He raced the receivers against Washington, but didn't have anything else. But, you know, against the Rams, he tied, like, along with Antoine Bethea, led the team in tackles. He had 8 tackles, 6 were solo, 1 was a tackle for a loss, in addition to the interception and pass defense. And you look at his total numbers for the year, guess how many tackles he has? He has 8 tackles.
That's, yeah, it. And it's a guy, you know, that it's something that we've been kind of waiting for, to see if he responded. I mean, he said all the right things, right? He said all the right things, but he responded this week in doing more than saying, and that was something we'd just been kind of waiting to see.
Now, in terms of other positives, I mean, unless you want to count Andy Lee's 400 yards in punting as a positive, you're really reaching for things. Now, minor positives, Robert Kendiche had another very productive game, had 5 tackles on the game. So he's active. He had a tackle for loss. He had another hit on the quarterback. And so, but that's 2 consecutive games where you see him doing things. And not only doing things, but producing statistics, something that what we saw with Kemdichie's positives in the past, I know we're kind of reaching right here. In the past, we'd see Kemdichie, you know, flash disruptively, but have nothing to show for it. So he's not only he's being disruptive at the line of scrimmage, but he's also finishing plays, which, you know, he's got so far. He's got 8 total tackles for the season so far, with a sack, 3 tackles for loss, 4 quarterback hits and a pressure. And so he's putting up numbers. I mean, you put that up over the course of a 16 game season, you're going to end up with an interior tackle with, you know, with 64 tackles and 8 sacks. And guess what? That's highly productive from an interior lineman.
It is, and it's what they've needed. He's not been as consistent of a disruptive force in the passing game as we expected, but in the same token, he has been extremely physical in the run game, which is something we knew he could do, but it wasn't exactly what we were expecting from him. So when you look at that, like you said, it's what we talked about. He's not going to have a sack in every game, but he showed up in game two. It wasn't a complete shutout. So he's on obviously the right path. I think therein lies the kind of end of the positives, outside of the fact that the Cardinals escape LA with no major injuries, no issues to really speak of in terms of injury concerns. I feel like this is the first time in roughly 20 years that they've left LA or played the Rams and not had any issues with injury. So that's
the carnage has been bad. They ended Carson Palmer's season twice and his career once. They ended Drew Stanton's season once. They ended David Johnson's season at the end of 2016. Obviously, it was the season finale, but David Johnson went down with an injury. Tyrann Mathieu went down with a season-ending injury. It seems that the Rams bring carnage. And out of that game, the only real injury that came out of there was Dennis Gardeck, undrafted rookie, special teams linebacker. He hurt his ankle. And then that's about it. Larry Fitzgerald's hamstring. If that's what you have to sacrifice is a hamstring to play against the Rams, maybe the sacrifice was okay. You came away healthy, but you were embarrassed.
Well, and I think it was one of those things too that, and you hate saying this, if the Cardinals were at all competitive, Fitz probably plays.
Yeah, but it is true.
But I mean, I think it was 27-0
by the point. Why bother?
But I mean, it was to the point where the national announcers were actively cheering for the Cardinals to get past the 50-yard marker before the game ended because it was such an embarrassment. There was zero reason to see what Fitz had or could do at that point.
So let's since really we have no other positives to look at, coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to rip apart everything that went wrong. Now, you've already heard some of it. We're going to talk about everything that went wrong. So brace yourself, Cardinals fans. That's what's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And before we go on the next part of the show, I want to remind you about our new friends over at Lightstream.com, and where if you're like a lot of other people, you've looked at your credit card bill and been shocked at what the interest rate is. The fact of the matter is the credit card interest rate is more than 18% on average. That's right, more than 18%. And what a lot of people don't know is that you have the opportunity to save so much money by actually rolling all of your credit card debt into one monthly payment at a lower fixed rate. And that's where our friends over at Lightstream come in, is they offer loans, they offer personal loans between $5,000 and $100,000 with rates as low as less than 6%, as low as 5.89% with autopay. And you can get that money, those funds, the same day you apply. But the best part is they're not going to make the money off the tops. Like a lot of other places, you get a personal loan, you have origination fees and this and that. So there's absolutely no fees with Lightstream. And if you've got good credit, you're rewarded with your rate. So you're going to be rewarded for having better credit. You'll get a better rate. So I've been to the site. It's super easy to apply. It's something you can do in minutes. There's an app for your phone. There's nothing sketchy about what this process is. The rates are there. You see a chart. If you want this amount of money, you can get this amount of money for this interest rate, this amount of money for this interest rate. And that's the best part, the rates. So if you want to save yourself money, a ton of money, and make your paying your bills easier, okay, we've got a special deal for you guys, listeners to the show, because guess what? on top of the already low rates that Lightstream has, our listeners will get a special discount on top of that. But the only way to do that is if you go to lightstream.com/CRED. Go to lightstream.com/CRED. Again, lightstream.com/CRED. And you'll get an additional discount on that already low interest rate. Subject to credit approval, rates include a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. So visit lightstream.com/CRED for more information. We're back on the Rise Up CRED podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And this is the time where we're going to rip apart everything that went wrong. And so get ready, because there was a lot to not like. Seth, where do you want to start? Do we start offense? Do we start defense? Do we start coaching? Do we start quarterback? Where do we start?
I guess we could start the defense, because, I mean, the offense is going to take way longer to go through. So, I mean, we can start on the defense. And I think for me, the two glaring things right now are two things that you and I both liked. I mean, so let's not you and I try and shy away from the truth, and not that we would, but let's call it like it has been. We both were fans of the trade for Jamar Taylor and the late kind of, Terry time signing of Trey Boston, and both those guys are not good football players right now.
Yeah, it's been very disappointing so far, whether it's scheme, whether it's whatever assignment. You know, after the Redskins really got nothing out of their receivers, the receivers ran rampant on the Cardinals this last week. So Brandon Cooks has 7 catches for 159 yards. Robert Woods has 6 catches for 81 yards. Cooper Kupp, another 6 catches for 63 yards. So you're looking at literally 300 yards of passing. 300 passing yards, 300 receiving yards from 3 receivers. And this was after that the Washington receivers really did nothing. And we felt the entire time that there would be strength up front on the defensive line, and that the secondary was a strength. Now, Patrick Peterson did his job. Jamar Taylor struggled. Now, the thing that appears to be, well, everyone's going to talk about how we have this zone-based coverage. I'm convinced that there are blown coverages, and which is amplifying and kind of most of the problems that we're running across with the Cardinals defense is with knowing and believing in the new defensive scheme, or being comfortable with it, that they're still not quite there. And I hoped they were better early, but I don't know.
That was even highlighted in the game where it looked like Peterson had, the short area of the field, maybe the curls flats, maybe even like the medium outs in a cover three look. And the safety was supposed to have the deep portion, and nobody went deep. And thank goodness Jared Goff is just an okay quarterback at this point and not a really good quarterback, because if he was good, he had another easy layup touchdown that he missed. I don't know if anybody remembers that play in the game, but it was late in the fourth quarter, and it was just a wide open throw that was missed by Goff. And so it's one of those situations where, like you said, they're clearly not there yet with this defense. They're clearly not comfortable with this defense. And, Taylor's better in a zone than he is in man-to-man, but I'm not sure he's better in this zone. In fact, I know at this point he's not better in this zone than he would be in a man-to-man scheme. And so you're looking at it and you're going, man, this is just not what we expected.
And there's another thing that we clearly see is that they don't really trust their linebackers. Week one, we it was revealed to us that Buda Baker is now a linebacker, and it is now. Truth be told, he's not a safety this year. He's not playing safety. He's either playing linebacker or slot corner, one of the two. So they've taken one of the linebackers off the field. The position that Seth and I were excited about for a long time. We were so juiced for the pairing of Deion Buchanan and Hassan Reddick. And no, they're bad, apparently, because one, they moved Reddick from a starting role every down player to week one, where he was a nickel sub, to week two, garbage time. Deion Buchanan got benched, essentially. Gerald Hodges became the start, played the chunk of the snaps, and Josh Bynes, who was the guy who came out for clear passing downs, now is an every down linebacker. So we know, so in addition to the problems that we're having with the scheme, the defensive backfield is they don't trust their linebackers right now, and they're looking for the right mix, and they don't know what that is yet.
And they're not, it's interesting that they're playing veterans that are limited over young guys with athleticism. And it just tells you about the mental aspect of what Steve Wilks needs from his defensive players, and that he doesn't see and or trust that in guys like Buchanan and Reddick. You know, we talked about Buchanan last week. It was ugly. Let's just call it what it was. It was not a good game. It was one of the more porous linebacker performances I can remember from an Arizona Cardinal. I mean, it harkened back to the days of Jasper Brinkley, where you're like, ugh, I can see why this guy is, you know, so bad. And man, it's to the point where you're almost worried about it, because it's not like, I mean, Bynes had a nice game against the Redskins, but it's not like Josh Bynes and Gerald Hodges are starting caliber NFL linebackers. These are valuable assets to a team as backup fill-in linebackers on your defense. And they are basically the starting linebackers alongside Trey Boston and Buda Baker as they kind of float into those areas. And so when you look at it, you're saying your 2014 first round pick and your 2017 first round pick were busts. I mean, there's nothing else you can say about it. Obviously that's subject to change if they get to actually get on the field and start playing. But at this point, them not even being able to beat those guys out is troubling.
Right. And, you know, I think I understand the motivation is, especially in a one gap, one assignment read defense. If you get the guys that are a little bit limited athletically, they are much more likely to stay on their assignment than a Reddick or a Buchanan, who will see something and go, I can make that play, and then blow something.
Right, and it comes back to what we talked about. There's a mental aspect to all of this that right now, Reddick and Buchanan just do not have the mental aptitude to play in this defense. And it, again, it just doesn't make sense.
Especially since, again, what we're talking about, this defense was supposed to allow them to play faster, right?
Yeah, this defense was supposed to get them in space. I mean, that was the whole point of this, right? Is like, oh, Deion Buchanan's going to play similarly to Thomas Davis and Shaq Thompson, and, you know, Hassan Reddick's going to get the chance to run and make plays. And instead, they're both sitting on the bench and letting two journeyman linebackers take the snaps.
Yes. And now we got a good game from Benson Mayowa, but another problem, at least on Sunday, was that Chandler Jones was invisible. Now, I will give you this. Chandler Jones might have had the toughest assignment of any edge pass rusher in the league over the first 2 weeks, having to face Trent Williams and Andrew Whitworth. Very, very good. Two of the very best left tackles in all of football. The problem is, we went from seeing, and this was a mild concern I had in the very beginning when we believed that, when we knew that it was going to be from a 3-4 to a 4-3. What did we see? Chandler Jones as a defensive end was good when he was at Tampa, when he was with New England. He was good. He was productive. But he became special when he thinned down and trimmed weights and played that outside linebacker position, which is a little bit. So instead of his hand on the dirt, he's playing standing up. Sometimes he drops. Most of the time he rushes the quarterback. He became special. He became elite. I mean, and I'm going to say this. I've said this a lot. I've written about this. In 2017, highly underrated. There was literally no, you cannot quantifiably say anything else. He was the most disruptive player behind the most disruptive and most productive player behind the line of scrimmage. He led the league in sacks. He led the league in quarterback hits, and he led the league in tackles for loss. No one was better behind the line of scrimmage than Chandler Jones. So it's, while I understand the philosophy that this coaching staff had to say, well, look how great a pass rusher is. We're going to have him rushing the passer every down, moving forward all the time. But you're taking him out of the specific role that made him special. As a defensive end, I expect him to be productive. I expect him to be good. But I am worried he won't be special this year. I think he'll be productive. But what made him great last season, I think, might have had to do with where he was playing.
It's not just where he was playing or how he was utilized, but it was the guys around him allowing him to do things like that. There's a level of confidence in your teammates that you kind of hit on that we don't see right now. And that's something that, hopefully it comes with time, right? But thus far, Chandler Jones doesn't look like he trusts the guys playing behind him. And I would say, quite frankly, at this point, I don't know if I blame him. So he's probably trying to do too much at this point instead of just doing his job and letting other things transpire. And it's showing in his play, because there's a hesitation. There's a lack of, like you said, that dominant play that we saw the last 2 years in James Betcher's 3-4.
Now, if you look at the back end has struggles, the middle has struggles, the defensive line, I mean, the interior, it's okay. Robert Kamdichi's playing well. Corey Peters is productive. I don't have a lot to complain there. We go back to the other side. We go to the other side of the ball, and there is a whole new list of crap. A whole new list of crap to do. So we'll talk about that on the next segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. When we come back, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best Cardinals talk, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. More problems. Talk about the offense. Talk about the offense. Let's start with quarterback, because that's where everyone wants to talk about. Bradford's been bad. Bad.
Yeah, I mean, you wrote about it. I think it's a 100% fair, you know, expose, question, write up, blog, analyst, whatever you want to call it, like whatever anybody wants to label it. I think it's 100% fair and accurate statement that the NFL community chastised the Bears and screamed for Mitch Trubisky while Mike Glennon struggled in Chicago. And Sam Bradford's been measurably worse by basically every metric available.
Yeah. You know, Mike Glennon, who was basically the joke of the NFL a year ago, the guy who got the big contract. He was the Brock Osweiler of this last year, got the big contract. But then the team traded up to draft a quarterback. And then Glennon wasn't like a savior. He was Mike Glennon. And here's the thing. The guy that they thought they were getting was a guy who would take care of the football, but who had some arm strength to be able to throw down the field. And they got a guy who likes throwing dump off passes, play it safe, and still manage to turn the ball over. But in that time period, he, in four games before he was benched, he completed 65% of his passes. He threw for over 200 yards a game. he had 4 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. Now, he had a few fumbles. He got sacked a bunch. But Sam Bradford, let's look at these numbers. He's completing, what, 60% of his passes. In 2 games combined, he has 243 passing yards. In 2 games combined, no touchdowns, 2 picks. His average yards per attempt is 4 yards per attempt. You know, kind of acceptable is, isn't it? You kind of expect about 6.5 is passable. And then like your really, really productive quarterbacks get closer to 8, right? He's got 4.
Right. He's playing at the level of a running back. And you and I joked about it off the air, but with those numbers, it's actually just smarter for the Arizona Cardinals to continue to run the football than it is to ever let him throw the football, because there's 0% chance that he's going to make a big play. I mean, he's not averaging 4 yards a completion.
He had 90 passing yards on 17 completions. He completed 17 passes and managed to amass 90 yards.
Right. And so it is basically futile for the Cardinals to throw the ball right now, because it's less productive than running the football is. And so when you look at it from those, when you look at it from that perspective, when you look at it from the idea of Sam Bradford is not offering the Cardinals a chance to do anything down the field, to be a big play team in any way, which we didn't expect, but we expected it every once in a while. And in the end, this has been maybe 2 of the most inept Cardinals offensive games we've seen. I mean, this is like Ryan Lindley levels type stuff so far.
Yeah, that's embarrassing. Ryan Lindley is historically one of the worst quarterbacks to ever play. A guy I absolutely adored. I adored Ryan Lindley. And I went on a little bit around on Twitter the other day. Just remember, on this podcast many years ago, in 2014 when he played, I remember the conversation we had when we said, this isn't when everyone was worried about how Lindley was going to play because he was so awful his rookie year. But in 2014, I declared, hey, this isn't the same Ryan Lindley. Yeah, it was the same Ryan Lindley. I was stupid. I was dumb. Sorry, guys. So if you've been listening this entire time, why? Because I'm dumb.
But that's the thing. It's one of those things where you never think it can be as bad as it is. And it somehow, for the Cardinals right now, actually worse. And go ahead.
I was going to say, and for all the hope or feats, like, just didn't change quarterbacks. You might as well put Rosen in. But when you get Steve Wilks saying, there's too many other problems than to just put another quarterback in, it's Sam Bradford's part of the problem, but there are problems everywhere.
There are, and it's been a, you know, we came into the season saying they had to run the ball to in order to throw the ball, and they just haven't been able to do that. And then they can't throw the ball. Sam Bradford looks completely freaked out and skittish back there. He's not doing anything to really put his guys in a position to make plays on the ball. I mean, if you look at the Larry Fitzgerald catch when they were backed up in the end zone, Fitz had to make a great catch just to catch the ball, right? Like,
it wasn't a well-placed ball.
No, and one of the strong suits that we were told by everybody about Sam Bradford is his accuracy. And I would say through 2 games, Bradford's accuracy has been probably, I would say, largely his weakest point right now. I mean, he's missing throws that that most like rookies are hitting with consistency. I mean, he's missing throws that a veteran of his ilk should not miss. And I think a lot of it comes down to a couple things. One, I think there's an uncanny amount of rust still on Sam Bradford. And I'm not making an excuse. I'm just being completely honest. When you look at Sam Bradford the last year, he played in one full game, a couple snaps in another game, and then he sat. The Cardinals didn't play. I mean, they basically wrapped him in bubble wrap throughout the offseason. Training camp, they turned him loose-ish in terms of playing time, but I mean, he was still getting a number of days off. Josh Rosen was doing a lot of work with the ones. I mean, it was one of the things that you and I talked about quite a bit. And then in the preseason, we mentioned that this was kind of a concern for us in that Rosen was not throwing the ball. I mean, Mike McCoy did not take the reins off. He just kind of pulled back and said, hey, let's save it for the regular season. And then the regular season's come, and one, McCoy hasn't turned him loose at all, but two, when he is throwing the ball, you can tell there's no rhythm. There's no sync with the wide receivers. There's no faith in the offensive line. I mean, he gets back, if his first read's not open, he's immediately looking to whoever his check down is. And that's resulting in these absurdly bad passing numbers. I mean, the dude completed 17 passes for 90 yards. His yards per attempt was 3.3. I mean, 3.3, that's literally worse than what the Cardinals rushing yards average were. Honestly, I thought that was like a joke. The Cardinals didn't even throw for 100 yards. It's a baffling situation right now. And I don't think you can put all the onus on Bradford, but I do think you can put a lot of the onus on the fact that Bradford needed to be treated like a guy that hadn't played in a year, not like a guy that is a fragile China doll that we don't want to get broken.
Right. And you know, Bradford is struggling. So there's a number of things. He's not throwing the ball well. So there's kind of problems across the board. So one, the offensive, so they're not like what was going to be the staple of this team was running the ball. We knew that the offensive line was built to run the ball, to run block, and they would be maybe adequate in pass protection, but they can't run the ball that much because they're falling behind. Therefore, the offensive line, while they've given up three sacks in two games, they're one of the worst teams at giving up pressure. And so Sam Bradford's not getting time, which causes him to not be comfortable. As a result, when there is the opportunity to make plays, he's rushing, he's not comfortable and not waiting, so he gets rid of the ball too early to the dump-off plays. Steve Wilks said that there were plays down the field that Sam missed because he just wasn't patient enough. So the offensive line, not good at pass blocking because they're not running the ball well. Two, Sam Bradford is uncomfortable. Three, he's not being patient. Four, the receivers in general are still having issues with getting open. So it's across the board. And one thing Wilkes said is that pretty much with when there's mistakes, there's like a different player every time, but it's always one or two. It's never like everyone. It's just like one guy making a mistake, which that actually leaves me to believe that there will be some sort of turn. I don't think they're going to go from awful to, you know, Rams offense or 2015 Cardinals offense, but something at least competent. Because what I envisioned this offense to be from the very beginning was a methodical run the ball, short pass, move the chains, and then every once in a while, a big play. You know, kind of like today's NFL. But the problem is, they're just not getting first downs. They can't do, I mean, when they have five first downs in a game, you know that there's a problem. And, you know, that talking about the scheme too. Another thing to look at. There's been nothing, like nothing to excite you offensively. We were told this offense was going to look very different when the regular season started. And what we're seeing is basic run play one direction, basic one run play another direction, the same passing formations for the receivers, 10 personnel, but basically it's like four wide and one in the backfield because Ricky Seals-Jones lines up wide as a receiver and then dump off passes.
Yeah, and it's and the weirdest thing, and I would say this is the weirdest thing to me, is those dump-off passes aren't even going to David Johnson. Nope. Like, they're going to wide receivers or Ricky Seals-Jones or – I mean, they're not – or they're just incomplete. Like, there's no rhythm into this offense, but then not only is there no rhythm to this offense, they're not using players like we – I mean, let's just call it. They're not even using players like they should. This isn't us second guessing either. This isn't like us saying, well, you know, I could go out there and call a better offense. No, this is a reality that their offensive scheme right now is, and I use that word very loosely, scheme, is not putting their players into a position to be successful.
And that exactly what Mike McCoy's thing was the entire time?
Well, that's what it was supposed to be, right? So it was supposed to be a guy that understood what his talent strength was and then used it in that way to really, you know, to exploit things. And instead... And I wrote about this on Monday after the game. None of these stats are mine. I didn't come up with any of them. I didn't chart any of them. Readily available on the interwebs and Twitter. But when you look at what has happened with David Johnson, it has become a complete bastardization of what he is as a player. And so when you look at it, obviously – in the second game, he had two targets, not two receptions, two targets. And that's kind of, I mean, crazy, right? But then you look at it, David Johnson in 2016, this is from Graham Barfield, he averaged 31 routes run per game, had a target share of 19%, and... now he is, and obviously this is a very, very modicum of analysis with the two games, but he's only running 16 routes per game now. So they've basically cut it in half. Not only that, he was used as a wide receiver on 26% of his routes. Now, 4%.
And remember, there's a fullback. Well, we've seen a fullback for six plays all year.
Right. Exactly. And so then when you think of all that, right, that's all bad stuff. But then again, the maybe something, and you know, you and I talked about this 2 years ago, but in his historic, 2016, David Johnson was Pro Football Focus's top graded receiver, not like receiving running back, but the top graded receiver in the NFL. I mean, he's basically Adrian Peterson in his prime for the Vikings at this point. I mean, the way he's being utilized is it's a complete misuse of who he is as a player and his talents. And I think it's showing because, let's be honest, without David Johnson, the drop off after Johnson is it's then obviously to Larry Fitzgerald, but from there, I mean, it's a drop off. There's the talent is not great.
Yeah, cuz I mean, number 2 receiver Chad Williams, what, 6 targets in 2 games, 0 catches. We have as many receptions as the Cardinals' number two receiver on the team. You and I, yeah, and me, 41-year-old fat guy. More same amount of catches as Chad Williams.
Well, you know, I've been
as productive as Chad Williams.
Well, and we have been doing some workouts and trying to get into to game shape. And so I think that they're just trying to make us feel good about what we're doing on the side for our work.
But the fact is that nothing else. There's blame everywhere. The play calling looks bad. It looks boring. Sam Bradford looks passive. David Johnson looks underused. Larry Fitzgerald looks fine. Chad Williams. And in fairness, in what we've seen from Williams and the balls thrown at him, he hasn't done anything wrong. He's just been, you know, someone joked with me, you know, he's not getting targeted. He has zero catches, but it's hard to get catches when you run routes that are further than 5 yards down the field.
And that's one of those things that we joked about, right? We joked about that at the beginning of the season. Oh, you know, they got Mr. Checkdown, Sam Bradford now. Never going to see a deep ball. Ha ha, joke, laugh, laugh. And then it's holy crap, through two games, they weren't joking. There was no jokes there. These were true statements about what we could expect the Arizona Cardinals offense to look like.
Let's talk about next. When we come back on the next segment of the Rise Up Seabed podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Is there something to be fixed? Can it be fixed? Can we fix it? What are we going to do to fix it? And the big question, is it time for change of quarterback? That's coming up next on the Rise Up Seabed podcast. We're back on the Rise Up Seabed podcast, and now it's time to talk about fixing things. And perhaps the one biggest, the biggest noise so far has been, well, why not just put Josh Rosen out there? Obviously, this season's kind of gone in the tank. Bradford's playing poorly. You drafted Rosen highly. He looked good in the preseason. Isn't it time to do that? What do you say?
It's one of those situations where you look at what's happened thus far, and I go back and forth because I understand the Cardinals' perspective on this. We don't want to put Rosen in a bad situation. In fact, we don't want to put Rosen in a situation where the team, you know, where he could be, you know, what's David Card or Blaine Gabbert it, or, you know, something like that. On the flip side, and this is where I think you give a caveat. Sam Bradford has been so bad. The offense has been so bad. The Cardinals as a team have been so bad. I think it's unfair to the team and the fan base to continue to allow Sam Bradford to play if this is all he has left as a quarterback in the NFL. So would I make a change? I would after the first half of the Bears game. If you come out in the first half and you gain, you know, I think they had 60 yards of offense in this half, you know, or this game. They don't even have 100 total yards of offense in their two combined first halves thus far. But they had 60 total yards of offense in the first half against the Rams. If that happens again, I think at halftime you have to make the switch. I think you have to go to Rosen because you have to look for a spark. You have to look for something to change what is the status quo at this point. I mean, there's nothing else you can say about it other than this is what the Arizona Cardinals are.
And my take on this, now there's a lot of people saying, no, absolutely don't. No, yes, absolutely, just bench Bradford. Now, I'm going to take what Steve Wilks said after the game. He said, everyone is going to be evaluated. And so I take that message and I mean it this way. Okay, so performance does matter. And since Bradford's performance has been bad, he's still a starter, but I'm going to give Josh Rosen reps in practice. I'm going to prepare him in case he needs to play, because one, it sends a message to the team that even the quarterback is not immune to personnel changes. And two, to light a fire under Sam Bradford. And if, yeah, I'd say probably the first half as well. So if things continue to look the same, you go to Rosen. You have to, because if Bradford now, and I get what they're saying. I get Steve Wilks is saying, you know, if it were just the quarterback, I'd make a change. The problem is there's mistakes everywhere, which leads us to suggest, because what did we see from the preseason and training camp? We saw that Bradford's the better quarterback. Now, something's going on, but from at least what we're seeing right now, Bradford, thus far, from what we saw in the offense, was the better quarterback than Josh Rosen. So when you have other problems, why would someone think that changing to Rosen would fix things? Well, here's the thing. You don't know. And if Bradford continues to play poorly and the message from the coaching staff is everyone's being evaluated, then you have to make that change and at least see what Rosen does. And if Rosen is awful, well, then you can say, okay, well, I guess that didn't work. Go back to Bradford against the Seahawks.
Right. But at this point, I think you're doing a disservice to your team the longer you allow this to go on. And obviously that's what the caveat is. If Bradford starts to play to the level we expected before the season started, okay, then leave him out there. There's nothing wrong with that. We're not, Justin and I are not saying like, oh, pull the plug now. The experiment's over. It has to be done now. No, what we're saying is you can't go three full games and score, just say they kick a field goal to keep that 3-point average, to score 9 total points, right? Like, you can't, it's not fair to your team, your organization. You can't do that to them because you're saying that we don't believe in you guys and we are more concerned with the future of Josh Rosen than the present of the guys playing on this roster. And what that says is we don't believe in you, so don't try. I mean, that's basically what they're saying, because they're not giving their team a chance to win if this continues.
And that, essentially that, I mean, that's the first part. Now, what else can we fix on offense? I think the first thing you have to do, give us some different plays. What have we discovered? What did it feel like in the preseason that the top, obviously, that Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson were the best offensive options that they had? And who did we start feeling like was probably the next best offensive weapon they had? That was Chase Edmonds. Okay, give us a little bit what we saw in training camp. Give us a little bit of Edmonds and Johnson in the backfield at the same time, where one of them motions out. Let's see David Johnson flexed out at receiver. Let's see, you know, more two-back sets. Let's see more running the ball. If you're going to say that you have to run the ball to establish this offense, then run the ball. Even if it means not doing well, keep with it, because what we've seen from the passing game is that the running game is better.
Right, and so your best players right now offensively, I mean, obviously, I think we would say it's Fitzgerald and David Johnson, but I think the two guys that have done the most damage opposite them would be obviously Christian Kirk, but I think Chase Edmonds has done a nice job. So, I mean, I'm not an NFL offensive coordinator. I don't play Madden, so I don't have that going for me. But as somebody who understands a lot about football, but also understands really, really basic concepts of football, it's never a bad thing to have all your good weapons on the field at the same time.
And that's what they did defensively. That's why they pulled out all those linebackers to put like all the safeties on the field at the same time, is because they felt having more safeties on the field, having Trey Boston, Buda Baker on the field, was better than having Buda Baker and Hassan Reddick on the field.
Right. And so it seems like the defense has that mentality while the offense has the mentality of like, well, this is what we do. And if it doesn't work, well, then we'll try again the next series. And that's, again, that just is such a defeatist attitude, right? Like, who does that? Who says, well, this isn't working, let's try it again Okay, it's still not working. You know what? Let's try it one more time. I don't know. Maybe we didn't try hard enough.
Here is how the possessions went for the Cardinals. Punt, 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 pick. Ran out of time at the end of the game.
Yeah, so, I mean, they didn't punt on the last drive. So but, yeah, I mean, when you look at it from that perspective, is they have one touchdown in the entire season. One. I'm not saying this to be funny, but, I mean, at this point, you could put Jess and I out there, and you're going to get the same results. I mean, that's what the reality has been thus far offensively. I mean, you could put Jess or I out there as your number two wide receiver, or, you know, and you're going to get the same results. That's just the reality of it.
Except maybe a dead Seth or Jess.
Cause... Right. Well, no, we'll get medical. We'll just end up with some like medical pay. So it'll be fine. So, but you know, that's the thing right now is when you look at it from that perspective, the Cardinals are a team in complete disarray because the things that can be fixed, the things that they control, and again, Jess and I aren't saying they're not doing anything, but it seems like they're not doing anything.
And then on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, maybe it really is. Maybe this is the case where just mentally Buchanan and Reddick can't cut it. And, you know, Jamar Taylor, would you replace him with? I mean, you could do Bene Bedwickery, Brandon Williams. None of those exactly give you confidence. And
No, that doesn't make you – that doesn't go, oh, yeah, that's
the move. Be
right. And so that's what – I think that's what the problem becomes overall is that, one, the defense hasn't been good, but, two, the weak spots, you're not saying – like, we're definitely saying show us Hassan Reddick and Deion Buchanan at the linebackers. At least show us that. At the corner position, you're going, I mean, I guess you could put in Bedwickery. That would be fine. I don't need to see Brandon Williams.
No, we're good with that.
Right. And so that's the whole thing. It's like, yeah, it's not good, but you're not exactly clamoring for the guy right behind him.
Right. Right. Now, my take on all this is, I believe and I'm still am confident that both the offense and the defense will come around and appear and will be something competent. The problem is how long it's going to take and will the Cardinals be able to win any games at all before that happens? Are they going to end up 0-6 and then, you know, then split their final games or you know, they end up 1-8 to 1-7 to start the year and then split their final 8 games and go 5-11. You know, that might be what happens or going 5-11. But the thing is ideally what we believe this team would be competitive enough to sneak a game in here early. And if and what we're hearing is this, there's still not a level of comfort on offense and defense, which leads me to believe that there will be a natural improvement at some point. They will find the right mix of players that will be adequate defensively, and things will turn around offensively so that they're not punting 8 times in a game. So they'll actually score some points. But the problem is that how long is that going to take? Because if we don't figure things out or see even the beginnings of improvement, then this season becomes very, very difficult for fans to buy anything into. Like, we saw the run defense improve, so there's a plus. So let's take the next step. Let's shore up the rest of the defense. Then we shore up the offense, because at least if, in every game, if we can see something positive, we have something to build on.
Exactly. And this team, this fan base, they haven't, you know, had to deal with this in years. But the reality is there's a very real chance that this could be the worst team in the NFL if this doesn't get, you know, if this isn't just a, like you said, like a time where they're trying to figure things out. This could be, there could be a reality that this is just a really bad football team. And I don't think you or I mean, we're not, I mean, we both had them at 7-9. It's not like we were saying like, oh, this is a playoff team. Like, you know, but neither you or I looked at this and said, this is a 5-win team. And right now, if you press me, I don't think I could find 3 wins.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, that's the reality right now.
Is once we get to that point, number one pick, now we don't need the number one pick. So what can we trade? What can we trade it for? How many picks can we get? That's what I'm, you know, if that's the route, let's talk trading picks. How many picks can we get? That's me.
Oh, I'm taking Nick Bosa. I'm just,
that's true.
You know, you if you really want to run a 4-3 defense, just get Nick Bosa and let he and Chandler Jones run stuff. But that's too early. It's still too early. We're gonna see a better game against the Bears, right?
Let's look at the Bears. So you've got a Bears team that now has Khalil Mack.
Oh my God. Sam Bradford's gonna die.
Khalil Mack and Roquan Smith. You've got some talent on that defense. Now, offensively, they're still kind of a mess, but are the Cardinals going to be able to do anything offensively against that Bears defense? Any chance at all?
So I jokingly/not jokingly in our questions with the enemy, you know, kind of thing we do with the Chicago Bears SB Nation site, I said, do the Cardinals get past the 50-yard line in the first half? And I said it jokingly, but then I was kind of being serious too. Like, does this team, I mean, does anybody fear this team offensively at this point? And that's what the question is. You can lament the 34 points. It wasn't pretty by any means, but the reality is if this offense doesn't get fixed, it doesn't matter what the defense does because there's no plausible way that they'll ever be in a position where they're going to, you know, they'll ever be in a position to win games because their team will never be in a position or their offense will never be in a position to flip the field. And instead their defense will always be playing on short, you know, oh, look, another 52-yard touchdown drive, right? Like that's where we're at with this thing right now. And it's just hard to believe that's where it is because it didn't seem like it was plausible that it could be this bad.
So let's look at this team. You know, you looked against that Seattle defense, which is a, really a shell of itself. The Bears only ran 3.2 yards per carry. Jordan Howard's held to 35 yards. And based on what we saw against Todd Gurley, there's some optimism that they can at least shut down the running game. Mitch Trubisky threw 2 interceptions. So the defense looks, I mean, from the looks of this, this is a team where you can stop the Bears' offense. And aside from having to worry about Allen Robinson, who had 10 catches, is can they shore up some of those defensive mistakes in the secondary to at least take the offense away? Now, whether the Cardinals can do anything offensively against that defense is a completely different story. And that's what I want
is right now. And obviously the first thing that you look at is that the first 2 weeks, Matt Nagy has wrote a beautiful script for Mitchell Trubisky or Mitch Trubisky. I don't know what he goes by at this point, but you know, has written a beautiful script for the Bears' first series on offense. And guess what they've done? Scored touchdowns. And I'm saying this and I'm trying not to sound hyperbolic, but in the same way, if if the Bears get the opening kickoff and go down and score, it feels like that's an insurmountable lead immediately. Does it not?
It does. I mean, these games have felt impossible, and they've held the team scoreless for one quarter. And then the floodgates open. So kind of the key is the Cardinals need to score points. If they can score points in the first quarter, I think that flips the switch. I think that turns a page into what happens, because if they end up playing down three scores again, like it's impossible. It's impossible for this team to do anything. If they get two score, if they get more than one score down,
it seems like the game's over. Right. And so that's the other thing is, like, what happens if, okay, so this week, for whatever reason, the Cardinals get the ball to start with, and they go their typical three and out and punt, and then the Bears score. Like, again, you don't feel like you have any shot at that point.
Nope.
You know, it's one thing if the Cardinals open this game up and go down and get points. I mean, even if they just get points, if they got a 58-yard Phil Dawson field goal, the response is, all right, there we go. It's already better, right? That's the first response. But it doesn't feel like it's even a plausibility at this point, because they've been so bad. And I think that's what makes the entire thing so difficult, because you haven't seen anything that tells you that this team is going to be able to overcome the problems that they've had to start the season. But you don't want to just give up and throw in the towel.
Right. So we're gonna make a prediction. I think I already made a prediction for this game, I don't think anyone in their right mind could naturally pick the Cardinals in this game yet. Nonetheless, 20-10 Bears, but the Cardinals will show signs of life at least.
I'm gonna say 21-6, and the Cardinals get two field goals.
Woo!
So
Phil Dawson will. Gets to kick Dawson. Something. He hasn't attempted a kick all year.
No, he's had two kickoffs. That's it. He technically had two. I forgot. They scored
three kickoffs.
All season.
Three kickoffs, no extra points, no field goal attempts. He's making all that money for doing nothing.
Honestly, that's the worst move they made, because they could have just kept Matt McCrane at this point and saved $3 million. But yeah, so I'm with you 100%. That's where I'm at. With it, I think it's a 21-6 game. I think the Bears have two kind of short field, easy drives. I think they continue their hot streak on the opening drive, and then throughout the game, they score two more touchdowns. I do think the Cardinals have more life offensively, but overall, I still don't think that they are where they need to be. And I think this is going to be the last game we see Sam Bradford as the starter. And after this game against the Seahawks, we'll see Josh Rosen get the start.
And if that is the case, when we've got new stuff to talk about,
right?
Josh Rosen. So,
right. And it'll start, you know, we'll have more stuff to write about and talk about.
Excellent. Well, with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best Cardinals talk on the web. We'll be back in a week. Hopefully not nearly so much doom and gloom. Hopefully things are changing. Hoping the sun rises at least a little bit. And maybe with a little luck, they'll come away with a win. On behalf of this podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Roots. We will be rooting for the Cardinals. We'll be back again next week. And thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!
Hey, Mercedes, what's better about the new Mercedes-Benz Sprinter?
The new Sprinter has better safety and security as standard, with autonomous emergency braking, alarm, and double lock on all doors. With new MBUX 7-inch touchscreen and Apple CarPlay as standard, and the option for me, the Hey Mercedes voice assistant.
Hey Mercedes, how's the new Sprinter connected?
The new Sprinter has powerful inbuilt telematics, including intelligent route planning, remote tracking, and maintenance alerts to keep your business moving.
The new Mercedes-Benz Sprinter. Better connected. Search new Sprinter to find out more.